Hi, this is Michael Ann Conley, and you're listening to Habits into Health. Habits into Health is all about helping you become healthier and happier by turning around habitual behaviors that create problems for yourself and others. This past week, I interviewed a special guest. Meryl Hershey Beck is a counselor who will be talking about what she's learned about emotional eating from her own experience and how she helps others resolve their emotional relationship with food. Before we start, let's reflect and collect with an experiential exercise to tune in at a slower pace. In our Habits into Health exercises, we say, let your body lead so your mind doesn't have to. Since our focus today is on emotional eating, in this moment, I invite you to bring your attention to your mouth. You can roll your tongue over your lips and around your teeth. Feel the saliva that's in your mouth. This is a part of yourself that you use every day in different ways. You might have woken up this morning with a yawn. Just take a big yawn and become aware of the space that's inside your mouth. Have you noticed how when one person yawns, other people start to yawn? It's catching, isn't it? Yawn again, and notice now how a yawn brings in big breath. It's a way of oxygenating yourself, feeding yourself. Feel that yawn going down into your belly. Another thing that you do with your mouth is talk. I'm talking now, and I invite you to say something. Say your name, for instance, or where you are, or what you're looking at. And notice the movement of your mouth when you speak, how you move your tongue, what happens in your throat as you speak. How are you using your lips to talk? A third thing that you do with your mouth is make contact with other people. For instance, you smile. Make a smile right now. And notice the sensation of smiling, your lips stretching, tightening against your teeth. You also frown with your mouth. Turn your smile down and feel the change in contact between your lips and between your lips and your teeth as you turn down your mouth. You might also notice a change in energetic state. In addition, you make contact with others when you kiss. Form a kiss with your mouth. Just notice how you reach out with your lips. Notice the change in shape. You are a shape shifter. And of course, another thing that you do with your mouth is you use it when you eat food and drink liquids. So whether you have food in front of you or not, just shape your mouth into chewing. Take a bite. Feel the saliva. And then swallow. What's your experience of focusing your attention here? Does it energize you or quiet you? Do you still yourself or become more activated? In your mouth or anywhere else. And now just let yourself breathe. I invite you to continue to be attentive to your mouth as we transition into today's topic. Our subject is about something that's often called mouth hunger, which is different from stomach hunger. So here it is, my interview with Meryl Hershey Beck. I hope you enjoy it. I want to introduce you to Meryl Hershey Beck. Meryl is an expert in what's called emotional eating. And so, Meryl, hi.
Hi, thanks for inviting me here today.
Well, I'm just really pleased to have had some opportunity to listen to you talk about emotional eating, and I just really wanted to share with my listeners some of the most important things that you have to say. Could you tell us what your definition of emotional eating is? Would you be able to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, emotional eating is eating not because of physical hunger. It's eating because there's something else going on in your life. And it could be, you know, you're feeling anxious or stressed or bored or lonely. And it's also, sometimes we also eat to celebrate and reward ourselves. But any of those, it does, it has nothing to do with physical hunger. And, you know, it's as if, you know, we're using food for a different purpose. And what I did for so many years was I made food my drug of choice because it numbed me and it made me make it through life easier because I had some mm-hmm. challenges that I didn't want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I want to comment about what you started with, Michael Ann, because it was so cool. When you talked about, you know, feeling the feelings in your mouth and everything, when I was doing emotional eating, and I did it for the first half of my life, you know, till I was 30 years old, and I was so not aware of things in my mouth because I would, like, swallow things whole. I would swallow things without chewing them.
Good point.
And I needed things to go down fast to feel full immediately. And so who would take time to chew?
Mm-hmm. Right. We call it wolfing food down.
Right.
So you're really not taking in the nourishment because there's a whole lot of neurological and salivary processes that help to digest the food when you chew. I learned that when I was taking classes in nutrition.
See, at one point, I really convinced myself that the reason I ate too much is because I liked the taste of food. And then I had these little inklings of awareness show up. You know, they like popped the surface like a bubble popping up.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And the thought was, well, what about all those times when you'd go to your parents' house? This is when I was an adult, and I would help watch their house when they weren't there, make sure everything was okay, and open the freezer and grab the pastry and shove
mm-hmm.
it down, and it tasted like cardboard. It had the texture and the flavor of cardboard. So that
mm-hmm.
myth went, poof, I can't believe that anymore, that I just liked the taste of food because I wasn't tasting it.
Right, you weren't tasting it at all.
No, I was using it to feel full.
Well, you know, there's something that you've said. You said something about food was your drug of choice. Well, I've always said that ice cream was my drug of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, this is a joke, but it's not a joke, because people would laugh. They would say, oh, ice cream is your drug of choice, and they would laugh and think it's not something that was serious. But in fact, over the years, as I really got in touch with what was going on, I realized that eating ice cream not only had an effect on my weight, it had an effect on my energy, and I would become fatigued, and if I continued to do it, I actually ended up depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's a drug of choice because, you know, okay, harm reduction. Well, I did a whole program where I really managed my ice cream eating, and that's when I really noticed that when I did eat it, that I had this whole side effect that I was just totally ignoring.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up, yes, it sounds like it's silly. Oh, ice cream is my drug of choice. But on the other hand, it actually is really serious. It really had serious consequences for me.
Yeah, ice cream is my comfort food, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that we know is that children very early on pair up food with feeling okay and with taking away pain. You know,
mm-hmm.
when a kid's crying for whatever reason, how often does the parent say, here, honey, here's a cookie to distract
yes.
that child? You know, when
yes.
you get a shot, the doctor says, here, sweetheart, here's a lollipop. So we
right.
learn very early that we can distract ourselves with food and that it can take away pain and make us feel better. What happened
yes.
to me was when I was six, I had my tonsils out, and so that's when I learned how soothing ice cream could be. And anybody who understands any nutrition, you know that if you're having digestive issues and you know, stomach issues, probably the worst thing in the world might be ice cream because you'll feel worse. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what was going on, I wanted my ice cream. You know,
right.
I always thought it was going to be the magic that was going to make me feel better.
And it actually ends up doing the opposite.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, you said something about lollipop, and, of course, this will be airing on a different date, but we're actually talking on Halloween night, which when we scheduled the appointment to talk, I didn't realize that. But this is the big night for candy.
Right. And for all those leftovers, if you have kids trick-or-treating,
mm-hmm.
and I remember when I used to bring my trick-or-treat bag home as a child, my mother would go through it and pick out her favorite. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know, monkey see, monkey do. That's what I did when my kids were trick-or-treating. I'd make sure I picked out my favorite from whatever they brought home.
And this begins a season, you know, Halloween with the eating of candy, and then we move into in the United States. Of course, I have listeners, you know, all over the world. So November, the end of November is Thanksgiving here in the United States, but not necessarily in the other parts of the world. But here, Thanksgiving is a big food thing. And then we go into the winter holidays, which is also really big around family gatherings and food. And, of course, are we all going to feel better around food?
Mm-hmm. January comes, and we've gained a gazillion pounds and feel like a stuffed sausage and say, I'll never do that again. And unless
mm-hmm.
we have tools to change those behaviors, we continue doing it because we don't know what else to do.
Right. And a lot of people, a lot of us, I've done this, I know you've done this, make promises that we're going to do something differently. And then 5 or 6 months later, we haven't really made the change unless we have a structure and a strategy for managing it.
When I was a kid, I've reread diaries. And when I was a kid at age 12, I wrote in my diary, Dear Diary, today I'm going to go on a diet. And for me in those days, it meant I wasn't going to have any sweets. Next day. Dear Diary, yesterday I had some chocolate chip cookies. Today I'm really, really, really going to go on my diet. Next day. Dear Diary, yesterday I had whatever, you know. Today I'm really going to start it. Every day I was going to start again. I couldn't stay
mm-hmm.
with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm looking at your website, and you have the word shame. This is for your book that we're going to talk about in a minute. You're just saying that S is for stuffing yourself when feeling empty and alone. And that's what you're talking about. Oh,
absolutely.
I'm just going to stuff myself, right?
Yeah, right.
And then
right.
H is for hating yourself for being out of control with food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're writing, and every time you write in that diary, there's a sense of failure
right.
because you didn't do it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely. Yes, yeah.
And A is for angry that you have too little willpower.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just would beat myself up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about M? M is mortified about the quantity you can consume.
Oh, my goodness. I ate so much when nobody was looking. I used to say my apostat was broken because I had no way of knowing what a portion was. I would just keep eating
right.
and eating until I felt so sick and stuffed that I would curl up in a fetal position, chew a few Pepto-Bismol, wait for the pain to go away, and then get up and eat some more.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think early on, I don't think I was mortified. I kind of reveled in the fact that I could eat a whole half gallon of ice cream in one sitting
mm-hmm.
and not even bat an eye. It wasn't until much, much later, particularly as I started to have more digestive kind of consequences and weight consequences, that I felt mortified.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Now, E is for eating whether you're hungry or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes to the base of your book, which is called Stop Eating Your Heart Out, right?
Right. Right. So, it's the 21-day plan to free yourself from emotional eating.
So tell us about the book. Why did you write it? Where did that come from to write this book?
Well, I experienced the pain of overeating, and I didn't even know I had binge eating disorder until much, much later. And I had a lot of pain in my younger years because it really was hell living the way I lived with food. Nobody knew what I was eating. I was a public dieter and a private binger. And then I became an adult and had a car and then later on a house. And so I can bring things into the house when nobody was looking, or my husband would travel. And so, you know, I'd go to the bakery and say, I want this, this, and this, because my husband likes it. And, of course, he was out of town. He never saw it. I felt like I was a fraud. I was full of self-loathing. I believed that I was one day going to get punished because I wasn't the person I pretended to be.
Sooner or later, somebody was going to find out.
Right. And I used to say, my middle name is Pretend. And for me, I had a turning point when I was 29 or 30 years old. Well, as a kid, when I was just 10 or 12 years old, I saw the TV made from TV movie Days of Wine and Roses. And it depicts the alcoholic struggling and how desperate he is and how he gets recovery with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. As a child, I said to myself, I wish there was a place like that for me, because once I start eating, I can't stop. And then when I was 29, somebody introduced me to 12-step recovery. And let me say, I hated it at first. I mean, I didn't like it. People were doing this stuff with emotions, and I thought all the emotions that we ever need are to be happy. And they were talking about feelings. Like, I thought, oh, I can't believe that somebody's really angry. Come on, get a life. And it was held in a church, and I was brought up Jewish, and I thought, oh, they're just trying to convert me. So I did not like the meetings. But there was two things that kept me coming back. One was I saw people who had lost weight and were keeping it off. And the other one, which is a far less noble reason, was I was a soap opera addict. And when I went to a meeting, I would hear George say, oh, maybe this week I will tell my father I'm gay. And I would hear Roberta say, oh, I'm going to go out with Randy this week. And I had to go back the following week. Did George tell his father? Did Roberta go out with Randy? You know, I had to know because we would check in. So it wasn't a noble reason, but it kept me coming back. It took me several years to understand the program, but it 12 steps changed my life. It taught me a way of personal growth so I can become responsible for myself and accountable and stop making excuses and own my behavior and make amends and ask forgiveness and all these kind of wonderful things that were really hard for me to do. And it became my family of choice. Felt like I had a sense of belonging there that I didn't feel anywhere else, because in my extended family and my family at home, we were always the looking good family. So what happens when you're not looking very good because you're feeling really angry? Well, you got to do something different with that anger. You can't let anybody see it. So I learned how to pretend real early.
Yes. Now, let's take a transitional moment. I want to remind everyone that you're listening to Habits into Health, and I'm here with Merrill Hershey-Beck, an expert on emotional eating. And I also want to welcome you to visit habitsintohealth.com, where you can hear more podcasts like this one. You can also read articles and my occasional blog. If you want to discover ways to soften a problem habit so it doesn't control you, there's a place on the website where you can ask for a free self-assessment questionnaire as well. So let's continue. You know, the 12 steps, I've always said they're one of the most elegant paths to the center of the self in the West.
Oh, I agree.
Just incredibly organic and can be applied to any problem habit.
Mm-hmm. When I went to my high school reunion on our 10th, I think it was our 10th year reunion, we buried a time capsule, and I put in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous because it changed my life. And nobody quite understood that, but that was like the most meaningful thing in my life up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because of 12-step recovery, I worked a program for a lot of years, and I, you know, led at meetings, and I sponsored a ton of women. And they were getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, that's when I became a therapist. Before that, I was a teacher. So I did not become a licensed counselor until 1989 and 1990, and it was a direct result of sponsoring so many people that were doing so well. So, you know, that was my turning point. Now, I know it's not for everybody, but it really was for me. You know, and then I've been living all these great years, you know, in a place of recovery and following following not so much a food plan, but following the 12 steps so that I could live that kind of life. And I knew I was called on to write a book. I just kept getting a sense I need to write a book. And I went to a writing retreat, and this is the book that came out. It's not the one I thought was coming out. It was coming out because I think I needed to really clearly see what my past had been like with food and how dramatically it shifted with recovery. So in the book, the first chapter is about my past, and then the rest are all these recovery tools that I used for me and then for my clients. And they've had so much success with them.
That's terrific. Now, you've also taken this work to the next level. You're also doing some other things to help people do what you call breaking the chains of emotional eating.
Right. So many people liked the book and said, oh, what else can you do? Are you going to do more with it? And I decided to put together a teleseminar series based on the book. And I did a free call. And the free call people can access if they go to www.tinyurl.com/breakchains, BREAKCHAINS. And there's a place there just to register, and you go immediately to have access to the call I did, which is a free call. And that's leading into, that's an introduction to the teleseminar series that I'm doing starting in November, which is called 5 Weeks to Freedom from Emotional Eating, Love the Life You Were Meant to Live. And basically,
wow,
the five steps that I taught in the preview call and that I will teach again, for me, these are the steps that, you know, when I boil all, my whole book, the 21 days down, these are the major steps. The first one is awareness, because we can't change what we don't know is broken. We can't change things like that. When I believed that I ate too much because I liked the taste of food, I couldn't change that until a new thought came up that showed me the reality. The second one is having a support system, which is so, so important. Anytime we do major work with ourselves or want to make major changes, we can't do it alone. We need a safety net. We need a buddy to be working with, or a support system, or a therapist to be working with.
Mm-hmm. Well, originally, you found that support system through the 12 steps.
Right.
And I know an awful lot of people, a lot of people who really found that support system. And yet there are many other ways to do that as well.
Absolutely. There's lots and lots of ways to find support.
What's the third thing?
The third one is doing personal energy work. So I'm trained as a licensed professional clinical counselor, and a few years into it, I became aware of these other techniques like EMDR and EFT and other energy medicine and other techniques that work not just with the physical body and not just with the mind, but also with the energy body. So I incorporate that because some of these techniques are so powerful that they can help us decrease the charge with any of our uncomfortable feelings, and those are the things that push us into opening that fridge and opening the cupboard and grabbing something. And it can also help curb cravings. Very powerful. And it's also very useful in letting go of any of the traumas we've had in our life, because we all have trauma. Now, I was very fortunate as a kid growing up. I didn't have big T traumas, which are the abuse and the incest and the divorce of parents and all the big T traumas. But I had little T traumas. We all do. And my little T, one of the little T traumas that showed up one time was, you know, I was always a good girl doing the right thing. And I was in first grade, and I was talking to my friend, and the bell rang, meaning class started. And I needed to finish telling my friend whatever that sentence was. So I did. And the teacher said, Meryl, go stand in the cloakroom. I was humiliated. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I never did anything wrong. So that was a trauma for me. And the energy techniques help the body clear the traumas that have been stored there.
Mm-hmm. So you use that. Now, what's the fourth step?
Okay. And the fourth one is doing your inner work. You know, we wish the past were just the past, but it invades the present. And
right.
One way to know whether or not you're having a reaction from something in the past, if somebody does something that ordinarily would seem like something very simple, maybe they shake your hand too hard or something,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you start crying and you realize that that's what your teacher did and broke your wrist at a certain age. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have traumas that haven't healed, and they come back up by little things that happen in the present. And it's important, not just traumas, there's also beliefs and memories, that we heal them, and there's many techniques to do that. And the fifth is learning to live consciously rather than, see, we are all in trance so much of the time. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago, and they said the statistics say that we are in a trance 5 to 50 times an hour. You know, that's an awful lot. Now, trance is
right.
not necessarily a deep hypnotic trance, but I know that all the listeners out there, I know this is true because I've asked so many people. You can be driving, and you get to your destination, and all of a sudden you go, how did I get here? I don't even know how I got here. Or you're driving,
mm-hmm.
and you look around and say, where am I? Because what
right.
happened? You tranced out for a moment.
100% of thinking that we can be attentive 100% of the time, it doesn't happen. But on the other extreme is this kind of sleepwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this case, sleep driving.
Yeah. And for me, a simple definition for trance is being unaware. So we go back to the first step, bring it down to the fifth step, and becoming conscious. And becoming conscious of what we're eating and why we're eating it. And choosing health and learning some techniques to find out what it is our body's craving and what we really need to put into our body that'll be nutritious and it'll be beneficial rather than detrimental. So that's the fifth step, is living with consciousness.
So in these, so you have 5 weeks, so you spend 1 week on each one of these five steps.
Yes, yes.
And the timing couldn't be more perfect.
You know, it's, some people are think, oh, we're not going to, why touch this stuff? I'm going to, might as well just keep eating until January. And I say, why not learn some tools right now? You can
enjoy the
holidays without feeling sick in January, like, you know, or feeling like a stuffed sausage.
Yes, a lot of people will wait. My phone starts ringing in January. That people have said, this is the last time that I'm going to do whatever. It might be the last time I'm going to go be around family and all that drinking, or it's the last time I'm going to drink, or it's the last time it might be eating, or it's the last time I'm going to, whatever it is, I'm not going to do that anymore. And the phone rings in January because they've been through this process of the holidays where they've really gotten out of control.
And see, I'm known as the ambassador of joy, and my heart aches when I see how much suffering there is around our behaviors, around our unwanted habits, and I know there's solutions for it. So it's just really hard for me to see so many people suffering when I know, I mean, my program isn't the only one, but it's certainly one of the solutions that people can use so that they don't have to suffer. They don't have to be in this place of hating themselves and beating themselves up. And one of the things I teach very early on is how to be gentle with ourselves so that we can know that we're perfectly imperfect, and that's fine. I don't know anyone that gets up in the morning and says, how am I going to screw up my day today? You know, that nobody has that intention. We just do the best we can with what we have.
Right. In Habits into Health, I say we start small and we practice kindness. And being kind to ourselves along the way is so important. Because of all that history of trauma and shame, that so many of us get caught in the habit of shaming ourselves. So we're shaming ourselves. We, like, take in what other the shame that other people handed to us, and then we start doing it to ourselves. And so practicing kindness is actually a really important habit to bring into everyday life. And that means kindness when you slip as well.
Right, right. Not expecting perfection, because we're living in these human bodies. We're not going to be perfect.
Exactly, exactly. Now, Meryl, tell me, you're starting this teleseminar series fairly soon, aren't you?
Starting November 13th, and they can get more information on my website, stopeatingyourheartout.com, or they can get more information at haltemotionaleating.com. That's the one that's the direct one that will give you all the information about what's going to happen, you know, each week, and, you know, what you'll be getting and all the great bonuses that I'm offering, which I'm real excited about, too.
Actually, that's a great one because all of my listeners are familiar with the HALT process.
Oh, good.
Because I've done a number of podcasts about H-A-L-T. Each one of these, of course, hunger, but it's not just hunger. You're talking about mouth hunger, but we act out anger through eating. When we get lonely, we eat. And when we get tired and fatigued, we eat.
Right.
So food is sort of a thread through all of that. We're going to be bringing this to a close pretty soon here. What is the one thing that you want my listeners to hear today about the situation that they're in?
I was thinking about what kind of questions can we ask ourselves when the food starts calling. For me, it used to call, I mean, I'd eat a big meal, and then I'd be calling 10 minutes later. And the four things that I came up with and their questions are, one, am I physically hungry? Second, am I really hungry, or am I choosing food to change the way I'm feeling? Third, what would happen if I allowed myself to be in my feelings rather than eat my feelings? And then the fourth one, what would support me in doing this?
This is great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
So everybody, just as a reminder, this is We're talking to Meryl Hershey Beck, and she has really put a lot of her own healing energy into a program that can really help. And tell us again, Meryl, where it is that people can go to find out more about this free teleseminar that people can listen to.
Right, www.tinyurl.com/breakchains, B-R-E-A-K-C-H-A-I-N-S. And all you have to do is put your name there, and you'll get the links to the free calls. And then the teleseminar series that is beginning November 13th is HALT, H-A-L-T, emotionaleating.com. And I know that sometimes people, we're going to be taking a week break during Thanksgiving and having an encore call. So if anybody's listening to this and it's before November 27th, you really can still jump on board because you haven't missed much. You only missed one call, and I can catch you up real easily.
Right, right. Terrific. Well, thank you so much, Meryl, for giving us your time today. I really appreciate you coming and talking about emotional eating. This is so important. And what a perfect time of year to be doing this as we move into the winter holidays for so many people around the planet. Eating emotionally becomes a habit.
Right. You know, and there is a way out. And I've been there. I know what it's like, and I know the way out.
Terrific. Well, thanks a bunch. Really
appreciate
it.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed being here with you, Michael Ann.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Meryl Hershey Beck. If emotional eating is a problem for you, please consider checking out Meryl's book, Stop Eating Your Heart Out, and her teleseminar series, 5 Weeks to Freedom from Emotional Eating, Love the Life You Are Meant to Live. It starts on November 13, 2012. You can find links to her information at my website, habitsintohealth.com, where you can click on the podcast menu or search for emotional eating. There is hope. It's especially important to remember that blame and judgment are a good way to stay stuck where you are, and that's why the Habits Into Health approach is to create lasting change by starting small and practicing kindness. This is Michael Ann Conley, and I'm going to sign off for now. You've been listening to Habits Into Health. I support you in turning your old habits around into healthy possibilities for your future. Thanks for joining me.